So before we consider this concept of being everywhere at one time, we could start smaller than that. Let's talk about just being in two places at once. This is a concept that sitcoms have enjoyed playing with for years. There's always a main character, and they have double booked. You know, usually it's an appointment and like a date, and they have to change clothes as they go back and forth. But the humor comes in that they are trying to be fully present in two places at one time, unsuccessfully. An interesting thing about this particular attribute, though, of being omnipresent, is that as we start to consider it, the idea of being in two places at once, we've gotten closer, haven't we, through technology? We've gotten much closer to being able to be in different places at the same time. We can't physically do that, but through our eyes and ears, we are able to interact with different people in different places. Soon, I'm sure they'll add smell, which no one is requesting, but right now we can do sights and sounds. And if you watch TV at all, you can't avoid home security commercials. And these are playing on where people now are out to dinner, and all of a sudden a little alarm goes off, and they see that someone's breaking into their house. So with great confidence and bravery that you wouldn't have if you were just leaning out your window, you know, they can even talk to the burglar and, you know, I don't know, feel brave or something. But we have this confidence and access, so that's a good thing, right? No one watches a commercial and thinks, well, that's not fair, the burglar doesn't have a fair shake in this. You know, like, we want that access of video and sounds and safety. So it could be a video chat with a loved one overseas. It can be a parent who's traveling, who's able to still catch the dance recital. These things are really wonderful. But until we free ourselves from the limits of our body and our mind and our soul, we can't be omnipresent. We can't even be in two places at once. Last Monday is my day. Mondays are my day to take my kids to school. And so I dropped them off. I rushed home. You know, the schedule's tight. And so I ran in to get into the shower. And as I went in, I noticed that, just go with me, the toilet needed to be flushed. If you have kids, you know that that's a vital lesson to teach. And you also know that sometimes it takes years to teach the simple, simple sanitary thing. Flush toilet, hop in the shower. So take my shower, I opened the curtain at the end, and the toilet had overflowed while I was in there, and the bathroom is just flooded. And they say the mark of a good storyteller is to be able to paint a picture. I'm gonna be a bad storyteller in this scenario, because we don't need any pictures painted. Just so you could probably fill in the blanks. I cleaned it up. I had to go down to the basement where the water was pouring through into the basement. And aside from it wrecking my day, immediately the thought I had when I opened the curtain was, I was right here. I was right here. It was happening right there, and I couldn't see it or feel it at all. So even just a thin piece of plastic, I'm in the same room, and I can't even be present beyond my body, my sight, my sound. I'm so limited. And so our limits are bound and set, and our point is that God does not have limits. If you have been here for this series, if you've been listening to Pastor Michael's sermons online, you've caught a theme that every week we're talking about God's limitlessness. And so here's the definition that we're going to use for omnipresence. It says, God is not limited or bounded by space, yet he is present throughout all space. God does not have size or spatial dimensions and is present in every point of space in his entire being. This is because God is spirit. So he's not contained within a physical body as we are. And this is a vast concept. I've had a difficult time even wrapping my brain around it. And so sometimes it helps to clarify a definition by talking about what things are not. So here is what omnipresence is not. First, omnipresence does not mean God is present only by way of influence and power, acting upon the world from a distance, but not himself wholly present throughout. That's a quote by a theologian, author, and pastor, Sam Storms. So the belief that God is distant but fully aware is deism. That's the idea of a distant God, uncaring, removed, not present. And that is just this belief called deism. Also, omnipresent is not on the other side of things. Omnipresence does not mean that because God fills all space, that everything is essentially God. And this is pantheism. This is the idea that God is part of his creation, that God is within his creation. Pantheists would say the tree is God and God is the tree, and we don't believe that. So we allow Scripture to kind of narrate what God says about himself. God is not part of his creation, but he does say this in Jeremiah 23. Can anyone hide in secret places so that I cannot see him, declares the Lord. Do not I fill heaven and earth, declares the Lord. So these attributes, again, they're mind-blowing. They are at times terrifying to consider. And many times they are awe-inspiring. God's omnipresent nature means he is present in each space of the whole universe and beyond, always and forever, simultaneously, fully present. A concept like this is really hard to quantify, so it's times like these when we lean on the poets. And so a poet, a psalmist in Psalm 139 said it this way, "Where shall I go from your spirit? Or where shall I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is bright as the day, or darkness is as light with you. For you formed my inward parts, you knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made." We're not like him. There's none like him. And there's no place that God is not present. Keep that in your mind during this sermon. And so that's who God is. But one of the beautiful things that Jen Wilkin, the author of this book, None Like Him, does in each chapter is not only lift up who God is, but then shows in our foolishness how we try to be like God in certain ways. And so that's what we're going to consider now. But again, the closer we get to omnipresence, that's good, right? That's technology. That's helping us achieve more connection, more safety. My relationship with my older brother has drastically changed. He lives up in New Jersey, and over the past 2 years, through an app, we're able to send videos back and forth on a regular basis instead of trying to schedule a phone call with busy schedules. And our relationship has grown from that. And so I celebrate that. And yet, I cannot be in two places at the same time. It's not the same as being with him. I'm stretched thin between two places. And any time we try and achieve that, we're like this woman, where we are in between two places, we are stretching to be fully present in both, and we can't make it. And as a result, we're in neither place, really. If you bring your work home, you're not present for your family. If you're on a date and you're texting, first of all, last date you're going to have with this person. But no matter how noble the cause, you cannot be fully present with this person. I mean, even though video chatting with my brother is a good thing, I am not fully present in my current situation if I'm with him. And look, your presence is a gift. Your presence is a gift to those around you. You have the opportunity to love, to care, to encourage the people around you. And if you are not fully present, it's not that you're just not fulfilling your duty. It also could mean that you're doing damage. Think about the situation when you're talking to someone, when you meet someone, and you're talking to them, and then they start looking over your shoulder to see who else is in the room. How does that make you feel? In that moment, you feel less important. You feel like you're not as important to this person. Or when you're talking to someone and they start getting on their phone, in that moment, they are kind of listening to you, but they're really communicating that you're not important enough. You're not enough for me in this moment. If you're around 20 or so, you're the first generation that's had to deal with parents who may have a smartphone. First time in history that someone can hold in their hand a computer that has information, connections to other people, and entertainment, all wired and drawing us in and designed to trigger the dopamines in our brain that really make us an addict to this thing. Which means that in your formative years, you're learning a lot of lessons from that parent who is constantly drawn away from attending to you to something that is just serving themselves. There's a study of 6,000 8 to 13-year-old children, and 32% reported feeling unimportant when their parents used cell phones. Over half the children said that their parents spend too much time. And these are kids that don't have a comparison. They didn't grow up without that, you know, so they're just growing up in this environment and they automatically see there's too much on that, there's too much time. And you may go, well, 32% is not that bad. But I guarantee there's no kid that said, I feel like my parent loves me more when they're on their phone. It just doesn't work that way. And look, it's not all like Instagram likes that we're chasing. It's not all about technology. To be present means not only putting down your phone, but being fully present in the moment. And we don't need phones for our minds to wander. Work pulls us in. We're concerned. We're nervous about how we're going to make it. We grow. We replay arguments or misunderstandings in our head. And we start to plan out the conversation that we're going to have or the email that we need to send. We worry about good things like the health of loved ones if someone is hurting. And so who can help that? How do we keep ourselves from worry or wanting to control situations outside of our present circumstance? How do we remain fully present where God has us with everything that distracts us or pulls us away? It comes from trusting the God who is omnipresence, leaving omnipresence to God. Because that person that you're worried about, that family member, God's there. He's present. That situation you have no control over, he's already there. That confrontation that you're dreading, the conversation that you're dreading, he's fully present there. And the Spirit of God dwells in you for those who believe, and he's available at all times in every moment. So God is always present. That's good, right? Is it? Because God's simultaneously and fully present in all moments throughout my life. There's some that I would rather him not be there, right? And we go, think about it, we go to great lengths to dictate privacy. We want to maintain information for ourselves, and we also want to put up a good front to everyone around us. And so that's, I mean, social media is a great example of that. But even so, job interview. I mean, can you imagine going to a job interview and you're trying to look your best and speak your best and smile big, and all of a sudden they lay out everything you've ever done? Like, thanks for, I won't waste your time. Let me just leave. It would ruin us if our deeds and thoughts were laid out. Because we fear, all of us to some extent fear, that if our true self were fully known by those around us, that they would no longer love us. And so if God is present in all places and he knows everything I've thought or done, what hope? What hope do I have? What hope do any of us have? My actions and my thoughts are not only embarrassing, it's condemning. God knows the thoughts of anger. He knows my actions. He knows my lust. He knows my racism. He knows my hatred, my indifference. He knows my pride. And all of us in this room are guilty of all of those things. And so if it's true, if he's been present for every thought and every action throughout my whole life, then these next words that I'm about to share make absolutely no sense. Because that God who knows everything said this about us. Jeremiah 31, he says, I have loved you with an everlasting love. Therefore, I have continued my faithfulness to you. His love is everlasting. His faithfulness is without end. And it's not contingent upon how well you perform or how well you think. There's not a scale of right and wrong. And as long as we, you know, maintain the good side, more good than bad, then he'll be faithful to us. He has said this before we were even born. I'm going to be faithful eternally to you. That's before you've had a good or bad thought. It's not dependent on us. 1 John 3, he says, see what kind of love the Father has given to us that we should be called children of God, and so we are. The tenderness that God extends to us, not because of what we've done, but in spite of what we've done, just out of his love. And this one messes with me. Zephaniah 3, he, that is God, he will rejoice over you with gladness. He will quiet you by his love. He will exult over you with loud singing. God will sing over you. As he is fully present in the moments where you are turning from him, he delights in you still. He loves you and I without fail. And so that's why we trust God. Not just because he's omnipresent and is everywhere, but also because he's loving. Moses, in today's passage, knows this. It deals with God's omnipresence. This passage has a lot, y'all, but I'm unpacking omnipresence. That's my topic, so that's what we're looking at here. As Moses spoke to God's people, he's dealing with omnipresence, and he shares that he's not going to lead them into the promised land. And he speaks of God being both with them and in another place. He says it in the same breath. And so, to catch up, we're in Deuteronomy 31. In the beginning, he says this, "So Moses continued to speak these words to all Israel, and he said to them, 'I'm 120 years old today. I'm no longer able to go out and come in. The Lord has said to me, you shall not go over this Jordan. The Lord your God himself will go over before you.'" As he continues, he says in the same sentence, he'll be with you and he'll go before you. He'll never leave you and he'll go before you. So he's talking about God's presence and his actions. Moses is speaking of God's power, but Moses is also trusting in God's love that God has shown him throughout. Consider what they've been through, the Israelites. The Israelites were led to Egypt for good reasons. Initially, it was to escape famine. A couple generations later, the Egyptians make a power move because the Israelites are growing in number and influence, and they enslave them. And then God brings Moses to lead the people out. And it's beautiful. At the beginning of Exodus, God tells Moses this whole plan. He says, go and tell the people, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to redeem you. I'm going to rescue you. I'm going to be your God. You're going to be my people. I'm going to take you to the land I promise. I will do all of these things for you. And then he does it. And as he goes through that, he tells them that the reason he's doing all these things is because of his love. Because he says, the only thing that we're to know as the Israelites and us is that God is our God and we are his people. That is a personal, loving guidance from God. So he's limitless in power and he's limitless in love. And then they see it proved throughout their journey. They go against the Red Sea. They stand up at the shore of the Red Sea and see an army bearing down on them. And you can imagine the people that are following are thinking, Moses, where's that God? Did he rescue us, then leave us? That's not rescue. Where is he? He's not here. And God showed himself in being there and hearing them and knowing what they needed by splitting the sea. So he delivered them in that moment. When they're complaining about food, they're out in the middle of the desert, and it seems like God is not there. God, where are you? We don't have any food. He rains down bread on them daily. God continually shows that when they think he is far from them, that he is present. But Moses has been their leader. That's no small thing. Not only that, he's the one, because he's the one who's been intervening on their behalf. He's the one who has kept them going. He is the one who is talking to God. And so he is now setting Joshua up. I don't know how Joshua feels in that moment. Those are big sandals to fill. But as he looks across the land that God has promised, Moses, with his love for these people, considers sending his family, sending everything he has worked for over there. But he has certainty that God will be with him, because he remembers that God has been with him. He's delivered them through the Red Sea, through the desert, through famine, against enemies. And so, you know, I can imagine Moses thinking, why would God do all of that just to abandon us now? Why would he go through all that trouble just to say, I'm out? And that's a good question for all of us. Because there are some of us in this room, maybe many of us, who don't see God right now. We don't see how he's acting. We don't see how he could be present. And when God isn't acting in the way that we think he should or could, it's not because he's lacking love. It's not because he's absent. Because think about it, like the Israelites, if he has been present throughout time and in each moment of your life, and he's seen firsthand the way that you have turned from him, the way that I have turned from him, if he's looked at my life and said, I've seen the way you've hurt others, I've seen the way you have squandered what I've given you, I've seen the way that you have ignored my teachings, I've seen all of these things. If he knows all these things throughout time, and still he sent his son to live and die and resurrect, why would he abandon us now? Why wouldn't he do it before he sent his son to die? Because it's not contingent upon our actions or thoughts. He has proven his love through the cross. He took care of the biggest problem that we face. So he's worthy to trust in whatever situation you're in right now. The Israelites were standing at the shore of the Red Sea. They're unarmed. They're facing a vengeful army. And they didn't know how they'd get out. And God split the sea so they could escape. He took care of their biggest problem. So from that point on, they could trust him because he's taken care of the biggest problem that they faced. I don't want to infer that what you're facing right now isn't daunting or even seemingly impossible. It could be tragic. It could be life-altering. And why we have to face certain things, horrific things even, I don't know. There's not an easy answer to that. This reconciliation of suffering and pain with a loving and just God. Anybody who gives you an easy and trite answer probably hasn't suffered, hasn't struggled with that. But when we stand today wondering where's God, just remember that when we were separated by that chasm of sin and death, we were enemies of God. That through his cross and resurrection, he split that sea, just like he did with the Israelites. He split the sea of sin and death. He took care of our biggest problem for all of eternity. And he's been present through everything, and he loves you. That allows us, when we grow anxious and we are worried about what's happening in different places, your family member who may be carrying great shame, who may be under the tyranny of addiction, God's there. He's fully present. If your kids are not with you, even seeing this baby dedication and imagining, you know, just you're dedicating your child and you're really saying, God, would you be with this child? I'm dedicating this child to you for you to be fully God, fully loving and fully powerful. God is with them. When we consider if God is everywhere, fully attentive, everywhere, throughout time, and he's loving, why on earth don't we pray more? We're not trying to get an appointment on his calendar. We don't take a ticket and we're waiting for him to call on us. He doesn't have a calendar. He doesn't have an appointment book. He's everywhere at the same time. Instead, we should be pleading Psalm 139, even with you, the darkness is as light. God, bring your light into the darkness that we see. We know you're here. When we walk in that trust that God is there and that God is loving, that's when we can experience freedom. Because we don't need to maintain a reputation. We don't need to seek approval from others, because if you follow Christ, the Spirit of God dwells in you and at every second is loving you and is sealing you and calls you child. It's almost like the Spirit of God, if we would listen, would just be whispering, my child, I love you. My child, follow me. My child, my child. We don't need to control every situation, even the ones where we are not present, because God is omnipresent. We can be fully present in each moment in that place that God has you, right here and now, in the limitations of your body. They're God-given limitations, so that means they're good. And we need each other. We truly need each other's presence. Not a distracted person who's paying just enough attention to feel like they're present. But he created us, and he didn't give us omnipresence. So his will is that you and I are present with the people that are right in front of us. And that's not just for us to encourage them. That is for us as the church and as followers of Christ to go and build his kingdom That is for us to go and be the hands and feet that are spreading the gospel of God's love and salvation, that are caring for those in need on his behalf, that are changing the very fabric of this neighborhood and this city. That's what we're to do as the church. And this isn't just on appointed times. This is at each moment you have an opportunity. If you got to lunch today, if you get coffee tomorrow morning, that person you're interacting with, you have a chance to care for them, to love them, to look them in the eye, to be present with them. And God's Spirit will speak through you. God's Spirit will use you in their life. Your presence is vital. And the way that we maintain present in our situation, asking the Spirit to work through us, is by trusting omnipresence to God himself. Look at what God has done throughout history with the cross. That is the shining thing that we look to, the cross and the resurrection, to know that his intentions are good and that he is loving.